been over 550 long days since Connecticut declared a state of emergency over concerns about a novel coronavirus that has become a part of our daily lives. In an episode of the Municipal Voice that aired in March of 2020, we noted that, as quickly as the virus, a lot of information is being spread, some good, some bad. And here now in September of 2021, that still rings true. Joining us to discuss the current state of the pandemic is Trent Joseph, who's the Director of Health for the Town of Madison, as well as the President of the Connecticut Association of Directors of Health. We'd like to thank our premier sponsor, Digital Back Office Palo Alto Networks. Check them out at digitalbackoffice.com or paloaltonetworks.com. The Municipal Voice is the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities podcast in collaboration with WHH LP 103.5 FM. I'm your host, Matt Ford. As always, be sure to give us a like and let us know what you're thinking in the comments. CCN's Municipal Voice podcast continues to present a key forum on important state-local issues. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the consensus views of CCM or member municipal leaders. Trent, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt, for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the last time we had a director of health on was about a week before the whole state went to lockdown the first time. And obviously we're going to be talking a lot about COVID and stuff today, but just for starters, can you remind our listeners what a health department does and kind of what your role as director entails there?
Well, Matt, again, just want to thank you for having me here today. And sure. So a lot of people ask, you know, what is a local health director, what a health department does? And put simply, it would be providing the 10 essential public health services, right? So What is that? It's the framework for public health to protect and promote health of all people in the community, including but not limited to assessing and monitoring a health status to identify and solve health problems. Diagnose and investigate health problems and health hazards in the community, inform, educate, empower people about health issues. So obviously establishing clear messaging or clear communication around that. Strengthening, supporting, and mobilizing community partnerships to improve the health of your community. And that can be obviously creating some type of channel to personal health services to assure that, you know, you have the provision of healthcare in some areas in cases where it may be unavailable. And developing policies such as like maybe local health ordinances and plans that support, you know, individual and health needs. So there's a list of things that this framework is comprised of, and it's a 10 essential services. So what does that really mean in reality? It means that, you know, the health departments are the ones tasked with providing the immunizations to a community. I mean, we play a real big role in immunizations, we play a big role in the health and safety of establishments and facilities used by the public. So we're talking schools, daycares, parks and beaches, restaurants, making sure that, you know, these things are safe for you to attend if you're a resident of Connecticut, right? Barbershops, hairdressers, nail salons.
I think, you know, a lot of us before the COVID would have heard of health departments a lot. Like when you walk in the restaurant, you see that thing next to the door that says A, and they pass, and it's safe. Yeah,
exactly. So, it's more than, you know, it's always public health has always been, you know, the way we look in the perception of the public, right? And we're not just enforcers. It's a large amount of our work is education. And that's a big thing, because you're going to hear me say this again, because education is prevention. And we learned that a lot with COVID, right, Matt? So, you know, getting back to, you know, boots to ground, you know, that's what local health is. We're the people boots to ground. You know, you don't think of it, but we cover a lot of different things, you know, public health nuisances. You know, people give us a call about things that are going on in their properties, hotels, motels, ensuring that those are safe for you guys, for people to attend. And being that local health director, you're the captain of that ship, essentially the captain of that ship and how they get into that community. So that's in a nutshell, the long and short of it. But obviously I can build a lot on those 10 essential services, which I didn't finish, but definitely, you know, if they have time, please look at those.
Was this kind of a lifelong passion of yours? Kind of what drew you into public service, but also specifically to public health?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a dream, but rather a goal, You know, I always wanted to do better at something each time I tried. And that's just who I am. And I came from humble beginnings. You know, both my parents are immigrants from Grenada. It's a country located in the West Indies. So living and coming from less, I've always wanted more just so I can give more. So I became more community minded. You know, obviously sometimes maybe coming from a little less, you know, there's the hardships and maybe pain associated with that, that can turn into wisdom.
You can see the direct repercussions of some of the policies that you now get to help make and
right. Work exactly. With. So, you know, all that in its sense, you know, it kind of driven me into where I feel that I can impact other people and change maybe their behavior, maybe the way they think about something, or maybe, you know, just by changing that behavior through applied education.
Excellent. And kind of following up on that, I want to congratulate you because you were recently elected the president of the Connecticut Association of Directors of Health. What responsibilities does that hold and what is that sort of organization about?
Well, CADH is a nonprofit organization that comprises of the 62 health districts and health departments in Connecticut. And so local health directors, you know, again, getting back to the role of what a local health director is, we are the liaison and essentially statutory agents, you know, of the Commissioner of Public Health. And we are the crucial providers in providing those 10 essential public health services at the local level. And for 25 years, CADH has been ongoing. And so being the president of that, it's pretty much representing all local health directors and local health departments and districts in Connecticut and being that voice and player at the table for, you know, very important conversations and policy changes and just ultimately public health.
Yeah, a lot of important conversations at a kind of important time for your field, definitely.
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's get to it. There's been no bigger health story in the health world or the world in general in the last year and a half here than COVID. When we last had a health director on in March of 2020, beginning of March 2020, it's kind of weird looking back at how little we knew. You know, for questions then were, what is this? And, you know, should we even be worried about it? What was it like to go through those first few months, that kind of first year and sort of this, you know, we got used this word a lot last year, unprecedented situation?
Sure. Well, Matt, wow. There was a lot of unknown. Right. There was fear, anxiety, depression, many questions. And unfortunately, many of us lost some people and, you know, close ones. And I think we forget very easily, you know, what that felt like. It wasn't too long ago. But it essentially brought out the best in everyone, in all the partners that we local health had to work with, and locally all the people that I worked with, because there was a run on supplies. You couldn't get gloves. Remember, you know, we couldn't find masks, and then you know,
people were sewing by hand for their friends and family.
Exactly. And it was like that for all of us locally. And then thankfully we had some reserves of PPE expired, but it was part of their response. And then, you know, from there, it was a great deal of just everyone depending on each other, at least locally, you know, forming those partnerships, which I'll talk about shortly. But that's kind of what it was. And it was the best way that you can respond to that type of situation is being well informed and staying informed, you know, and that's kind of what helped.
Yeah. So Madison, as well as Connecticut in general, after kind of the initial outbreak, has done pretty well as far compared to the rest of the country at flattening the curve, keeping cases down. Why do you think that is? Kind of what's made Connecticut a little bit more resilient than some other places?
Well, I think Connecticut in itself, you know, we're a state with a good infrastructure of health systems. I can't, you know, cannot fail to mention health departments, you know, because we're the boots to ground, the hospitals. And, you know, that I think was the effectiveness of, you know, Connecticut in the original response. But locally, I can talk about locally, You know, it was really the ability of our command staff to, you know, keep our residents and our community well informed, and the continuity of that message. And that's ultimately what really helps. Again, remember, education is prevention, and, you know, clear messaging, and the ability of an individual to be well informed. They're able to be well more prepared to respond to certain things and know what's coming. And that's kind of what we did. And I know we may talk about this shortly, but I do want to say we activated our incident command systems and emergency operations center here locally, and that comprised of all of the important players in terms of operations, logistics, planning, and finance, right? So that's the fire marshal, the police chief. Obviously, first off, the municipal CEO was there on board for Selectman Alliance, and our fire marshal, our police chief, superintendent, director of finance, director of human resources, director of EMS, you know, everyone was at the table, and it was the strength of that team that allowed for that clear message and for our community, which happened to be more mobile, you know. So, you know, if you have a mobile community that's able to get out and be more aware and just knowledgeable and cognizant of the threat and or risk, it really helped with how we were able to respond, and that ultimately played a big part. Yeah.
So it sounds like part of the success of Madison, at least, was that you had some of that stuff in place already.
Well, sure, yeah. So, and then across the state, you know, there is emergency response plan that, you know, we all across the state, we are regionalized in preparing for incidents like a pandemic. So those plans, sure, they provided a framework for us where they obviously followed to the script. Because, you know, real time is different than when you're planning and running exercises. But, you know, originally also, and everything is based on at what time in the pandemic we're referring to.
To be fair.
So, you know, there's a lot that had happened statewide that helped Connecticut, you know, just remaining informed, and, you know, with our Department of Public Health providing, you know, real time information, you know, you can't forget that the state played a big role, and commissioner did as well. So,
yeah, speaking of that, kind of the state as a whole and whatever, we're all in this together. Was there a lot of collaboration between your organization, local governments, other health districts, and the state kind of throughout this whole thing?
Yes, Matt, absolutely. You know, it's a great opportunity to mention this on a call, but we formed a local partnership between, you know, Madison and four other towns. That was, you know, kind of derived from a grassroots relationship that, you know, that local health directors have. So it was East Shore District Health Department with Director Michael Pascasilla, and Guilford Health Department, which is Sonia Marino. And, you know, we already had a partnership formed to provide the 10 essential services of public health. And, you know, knowing the current trend of the virus, we understood that, you know, it's time for our municipalities to at least be galvanized so that we can, you know, better help our communities in a whole, because big thing about public health, it is labor and resource driven. And, you know, that's a big player in a lot of this pandemic response. So it's better to put resources together, and we ultimately ended up doing that. And that was a big role in forming that. So all the CEOs from the four towns had to come together, and, you know, three health departments and districts.
So since the vaccine has become available, Connecticut has luckily become one of the most vaccinated states in the country. Towns and cities across the state have come up with kind of unique ways to get the word out. To get individuals to, you know, be inoculated. How did Madison approach that?
Well, first it came out in waves, right? So the eligibility requirements is what kind of drove the initial interest in the vaccine. So if you were immunocompromised and were in a eligible age group, you were considered prioritized. Actually, prior to that, if you were a first responder, who was exposed to, or your susceptibility to being exposed was higher, then you were first in line. So I guess, you know, from a community perspective, seeing that the people who are to keep you safe. You see fire, EMS, and police officers getting vaccinated, and that sets a precedent, right? And it's a role, being a role model. And then, you know, the immunocompromised and age eligible individuals, you know, they became interested because mm-hmm. they were eligible. And what we did, we had to, you know, through our emergency command system and statewide planning mm-hmm. through DPH, we had a point of dispensing for vaccinations and events like this. So we activated our pod point of dispensing, okay. and we ran clinics out of there in town. And, you know, that was originally, it was ran solely by, you know, the health department efforts mm-hmm. that you know, myself and what I established with the other two. But then again, we had to depend a lot on our town resources. So, you know, the director of our senior center, mm-hmm. You know, he came on board and his staff came on board, and we all, you know, it became a team effort, and that ultimately also dictates the role of a local health director, based on the community need. And, mm-hmm. and that's also a big role. Because everybody's role can be different based on the community they serve. Mm-hmm.
And now that we've kind of gotten past that initial, you know, who's eligible at this point, and now it's kind of the people that are holdouts. Is there anything you're doing to kind of encourage some of the holdouts at this point?
Yeah, so there's some hesitancy, right? Mm-hmm. And that's an important question, Matt, because, you know, we look at the current rate and the current trend of the Delta variant, which is obviously a lot more transmittable than any other strain of, you know, COVID-19 that we saw or seen. And I think people confuse science with the truth. And science is more so a systematic method of pursuing the truth, mm-hmm. right? So if scientists are wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean it's invalidating the method, right? Mm-hmm. So we forget that science is the most rigorous process in discarding inaccurate ideas.
Yeah.
So we have to trust the science, and essentially we have to trust the process. And that's what I try to tell a lot of individuals you see are leading. If you look at the current case trend, it's 20 to 29 who are leading the positive rate, and 29 unvaccinated, to be clear. And then, just put it simply, it's our 20 to 50 year old age group is what we're seeing the common leading trend in the new Delta variant and positive cases. So, you know, what does it mean? I think messaging around it is very important, rather than saying, you know, we have X amount of cases and these are the people who are unvaccinated and this is the reason why. I think a messaging of you know, vaccines do pose a risk, but not a greater risk than having the virus of COVID-19, right? So I think it all becomes a messaging campaign, and, you know, because it's education, again, is that prevention tool. So, you know, that's what it is, and it's going to be some time before I think we can convince everyone to trust the process and back to that whole science notion.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, this is why you wear a seatbelt, right? Yeah. It's a sense of protection. It can save your life in an accident. It should be the same for, you know, the vaccine.
You are listening to the Municipal Voice on WNHH 103.5 FM.
Obviously, you're talking about Delta being kind of the problem more so right now, because the pandemic is certainly not over. Right. Our high vaccination rates have kind of kept Connecticut at the lower end of the list, but breakthrough cases have risen. What should the public know about breakthrough cases? Are people being hospitalized at the same rate that they were?
Well, so hospitalizations in the unvaccinated are obviously increasing.
Yes.
And that's, you know, Connecticut, you know, our Department of Public Health, state of Connecticut, they provide aggregate data to us and all Connecticut residents. And that's just a snapshot in time of the current trend. So what to make of the breakthrough cases is the fact that Delta is here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still in this. We're not completely out of the dark here. Mm-hmm. And the only way, or essentially the most effective way to protect yourself is by getting the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And being well informed, you know, those go hand in hand, you know, definitely go hand in hand. So what can you make of it? You know, earlier on, you look at it from a year ago, from say now, today, we probably had somewhere around 5,000 deaths in Connecticut. You know, now we're a lot more higher than that. Just a year later, COVID-19 confirmed cases that are attributed or deaths essentially attributed to COVID-19, sorry. Mm. And you look at the trend, and at first it was maybe talking about the data here, right? Yeah. Because that's what we depend on essentially is it was maybe lower in your minority groups and maybe higher in your non-Hispanic white. And then now you look at the trend, it's higher in your minority groups or non-Hispanic, Black, African-American, and Hispanic, and it's a lot lower in essentially non-Hispanic white, because it's also reflective of our vaccine percentages and rates, right? So it's almost, if you look at the data, it's almost a complete correlation, but more importantly, you're seeing that the Delta variant is a lot more transmissible, I think five times more transmissible than any other variants, and you're probably 16 times more likely to be hospitalized, or at least your relative risk is 16 times more likely, you know, to result into either illness or hospitalization if you're unvaccinated.
So aside from, you know, the vaccines, one of the other big issues around this is mask mandates.
Right.
And the Delta coming back has, you know, brought a whole kind of new round of mask mandates in town halls and other, you know, public venues. Where's medicine right now? What kind of, where's your thinking on that sort of stuff?
Well, we recently have mandated masks in all our town facilities. Mm-hmm. And as you saw, well, also maybe parallel to the requirement for educators to be vaccinated. We've requiring masks in our schools, which was a big thing prior to school reopening.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what the current scene is. And we're still recommending, you know, masks be worn indoors. And that's another thing I want to mention too, because there's a lot of talk about being vaccinated and still potentially being able to, you know, expose someone else to the virus or shed the virus. But, you know, that's the importance of mask wearing and all the other mitigation strategies that are in place. When you go inside of a building or, you know, in a congregate setting. So,
And beyond sort of mask mandates, do you see on the horizon a time when we might have to go back to a full kind of lockdown situation or anything like that?
I probably, you know, I don't know. And maybe the governor's office knows a little bit more than I do about that. But I wouldn't know. I don't think that we can go in that direction again because we've fully opened and it'll be maybe a little bit harder to justify given some communities have higher vaccination rates and lower infection rates. So maybe justifying that would be a hard push.
Hard sell, definitely. Yeah. Another thing that's kind of, as this goes on, becoming clear that at some point people are probably going to need booster shots.
Yes,
kind of based on what you know, do you think that people are going to kind of, once again, have to be kind of encouraged to go on with the booster shots? Or are people going to show up? And kind of, when do you think that all is going to start happening?
Well, there's people have solicited already interest in, you know, acquiring a booster shot, you know, from my health department and other health departments. What do I see? You know, I think if we continue to see a trend and people remain informed and they see the relative risk, you know, I think that the booster is going to play a vital role. And, you know, there's going to be there's definitely going to be some interest in there. Whether or not I'm not too sure on, you know, everyone's idea or thoughts mm-hmm. on the booster shots, because I know a lot of people are waiting for more of the science mm-hmm. to be released, respectfully, which is okay. But, you know, again, if you are immunocompromised, if you're someone who may be more susceptible to getting the virus, or you work in a particular field mm-hmm. that, where you're more susceptible, then it will be to your benefit to protect yourself. And I said that earlier in the beginning, that, you know, the better you protect yourself, the better you will be versus anyone else.
Yeah. So at the top of the show, when we were talking about what you do, you mentioned that there's 10 kind of different areas that health departments focus in. And we've been talking about COVID a lot, but what else do you wish people knew about public health, about kind of the work that you do that doesn't have to deal with COVID?
Well, you know, starting again, I mean, because public health, you know, ultimately, you know, we want to protect and promote the health of mm-hmm. our community. And I know COVID, it goes right down the middle, but there's other things that we do. I mean, we want to assure that we keep a competent workforce, right? Mm-hmm. We still want to be able to enforce laws and regulations that protect mm-hmm. health and ensure the safety. Although it's not directly related to public health, it's related to all the other, chronic or essentially acute diseases that you can be, respiratory diseases that you can be exposed to. Ultimately, you know, we're still the boots to ground agency mm-hmm. that protects the community. And maybe if it's not directly related to COVID, we're just getting back to those more environmental health concerns and problems within our own jurisdiction that we have to respond to. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of land use issues that we, you know, maybe need to get back to, and mm-hmm. Reinforcing of certain codes with other facilities mm-hmm. is going to be very, very important. So that's kind of where we are now. But
imagine getting back to some land use stuff. Is there like some stuff that was kind of on your agenda before COVID that maybe got put on hold that, you know, you're looking forward to getting back to?
Sure. I mean, there's always something. It'll be hard. It's really hard to say one thing. Mm-hmm. There's still, you know, global climate change. Mm-hmm. There's sea level rise. We have to be well aware of mm-hmm. and cognizant of.
Yeah, it's a short town, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, this is West Wharf. This is Madison behind me, mm-hmm. for the viewers. But you know, that's one thing. There's maybe more other health education efforts, or you know, maybe just related to COVID, but mm-hmm. dental health. And then there's like fall preventions. There's obesity prevention. Mm-hmm. Everything is related to your community health problems, of course. I know in some other communities there's still the opiate crisis, right, going on.
Definitely, yeah.
Right, and there's still big lead prevention that mm-hmm. you know, we're all concerned with, and all these things are underneath the umbrella of public health, and you know, again, labor and resource driven is going to be, you know, how effective, you know, those programs and services are.
Excellent. Well, Trent Joseph, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. I appreciate you having me here.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guest, Trent Joseph. I'd like to thank our premier sponsor, Digital Back Office Palo Alto Networks, who you can check out at digitalbackoffice.com and paloaltonetworks.com. The Municipal Voice is a co-production by CCM and WNHH 103.5 FM. Kevin Maloney is our executive producer, Christopher Gilson is our producer, Harry Draws is on the boards, and I'm Matt Ford, your host. You should check out our Facebook page and give us a like, and watch out for our CCM chat series on our YouTube page.